today actually marks the beginning of the 100-year anniversary of what was known as the Scopes Monkey Trial. This was a pivotal moment in American history that I think reverberates far beyond just that courtroom in Dayton, Tennessee. And while it's often caricatured in popular memory as a clash between faith and science, the 1925 trial was far more than just a debate over Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. It was, and in my opinion remains, a flashpoint in the cultural and legal battle over the soul of the nation. 100 years later, I think the legacy reminds us that truth still matters, law absolutely shapes culture, and silence can be surrender. As we're talking about even the context of the IRS and the context of the pulpit and churches, we have to remember to not self-censor. We have to do as much as not only is required under the Bible, and especially in our role and obligation as individual Christians, and in our Christian lives, but also our roles in our family. If we're parents, of course, there is a duty that is incumbent upon parents to raise their children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And then in the church context, it's not just a role for pastors and elders, but as my church always says, every Sunday, go and remember to be the church. It means that you don't just come and sit and partake of the service every Sunday. You are called to be a part of the church throughout the week. And that means impacting culture. Because as we look even over the last few years of American history, but the last several hundred years, as we're about ready to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our great Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and the founding of our nation, we need to recognize not just where we've been, but the pivotal moments that have involved Christians and some moments where Christians have kind of ceded the argument. And so this trial of John Scopes, who was a high school teacher, he knowingly violated Tennessee's law by teaching evolution in public schools. And this drew a national spotlight. And on one side of this argument, and I would encourage everyone to go and actually, if you haven't really studied in depth the history of this particular trial, where American politics and kind of civics and our culture was at in 1925 as we were kind of coming through the first Industrial Revolution, as we were, headed into more of what the age of science, quote unquote, and how a lot of Americans were characterizing and starting to characterize religion as a crutch rather than, as I always characterize it, I'm not a Christian just because I believe in God like I might believe in the tooth fairy and it doesn't actually matter. I'm a Christian because I believe that the explanation in the Bible is the best explanation for the reality to which I am presented, because we all have to answer life's most important questions of who are we? Why are we here? What do we believe about God? Is there a God? If there is, who is he? And what is his interaction with humanity? What is our purpose? Where are we going after this life? Is there purpose for this life? All of those questions we have to answer. And there are some worldviews and explanations of that reality and the answers to those questions that are better and more logical, more sufficient than others. And the biblical worldview and the Christian worldview and the understanding of the full scope of the Bible provides that explanation of God's creation, his movements throughout history, all the way through the Bible, through the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, the sufficiency for our salvation, and then all the way to the end of all things in Revelation as predicted. God, as the creator, as the author of all things, has given us an explanation not only for our existence, but has revealed to us who he is. And there are those who would seek to promulgate other worldviews. And one of those was John Scopes. And so he knowingly violated Tennessee's law by teaching evolution in a public school. And he's kind of held up by the left as, this activist that was, before his time. And even though he lost the trial and everything, he was this great advocate that, go and do likewise, kind of thing. But this trial was so fascinating because on one side was the famed orator and three-time presidential candidate, William Jennings Bryan, defending biblical truth and the right of a state to set educational standards rooted in its values. And then on the other, in terms of the advocates here, was Clarence Darrow, who was a celebrity attorney championing quote-unquote academic freedom and modernist skepticism. And this is 100 years ago. We are in the crosshairs of the exact same debate today about educational standards. I mean, we just had a Supreme Court case that was questioning, and three justices stood on the side of saying, no, that parents can't opt out of curriculum that is promoting the false gender ideology that is actually telling kids that if you're male, you can become female, or if you're female, you can become male, and all of this gender queer nonsense that, you know, two men can get married and actually call that a marriage. I mean, these are questions that didn't just start 100 years ago, but started largely in America 100 years ago that we're still asking and answering today in a wide variety of contexts. And so this history still matters because truth still matters and these questions still matter. And so even though Scopes, this teacher, was found guilty and fined $100, which, you know, was obviously, they didn't have Bidenflation back in the day, so it was a little bit bigger deal. The verdict was later overturned on a technicality, but it left the constitutional questions unresolved. But the cultural and jurisprudential impacts were lasting. The Scopes trial marked a defining moment when the elite class began openly mocking biblical Christianity and treating traditional values as backwards and relics of a less enlightened time. The courtroom then was transformed and became a theater for cultural revolution. And we still see that same kind of theater today. And we also still see that same kind of clash today where the courtroom is being used for policymaking and determinations on the culture, and especially and particularly attacking Christians for promoting truth. So today, many look back on the trial as a loss for creationists, but from a biblical worldview, the real loss was not legal as much as it was cultural. And the trial exposed the growing divide between a nation founded on biblical principles and a modernist elite that was bent on uprooting them. This was not merely about biology curricula. Just like it's never about just whatever the left says that it is. It's always about something deeper, and it's always the next step in advancing their secularist agenda that is specifically and intentionally anti-Christian, anti-truth. Because this is all about deciding who determines what truth is, who shapes young minds, and who says whether God has a rightful place in public life and society. So it's no coincidence that this cultural shift was accompanied by a legal one. That's always how it is. As Andrew Breitbart very famously said, politics is downstream from culture. If you want to change politics, you first need to change culture. This is why the left is attacking the family as a unit, because the best opportunity and the best environment to raise rational thinking individuals who will seek truth, who will promote truth, is in the context of the traditional God-established family with one husband, one wife, one father, one mother, who are training up their children to understand and look at reality. And so it is no coincidence that the left is consistently attacking marriage. Then they're also attacking the family. They're attacking the right of parents to determine the education of their children, to be able to determine where they go to school, who they are taught by, where they're taught, what books they have to read, and even whether or not parents can opt out their children from curriculum that is teaching them clear propaganda and utter false lies. And so over the following decades, and it's now been 100 years, court decisions have increasingly and intentionally banished God from the classroom and redefined liberty as license. I wrote an article, this is now almost a decade ago, if you can believe this, for National Review, that was in the context of Trump's first term and talking about, a lot of his policies and executive orders surrounding immigration. And, you know, the question is always, you know, well, what amount of due process and what about the rights, you know, and all of these things. But we can't have a conversation about rights without first asking, where do rights come from? and first identifying who God is. Because our founders understood that rights aren't mere privileges. Liberty is not just license. Because if you have a license, then that license can expire, it can be further clarified, it can be taken away. You can say, well, you don't actually qualify for it. Rights are not license. Rights are not privileges that are defined for you by a benevolent government. Rights come from God, our creator, and it is the obligation and the duty imposed on government to preserve and protect those rights for its own citizens first, by the way, which is how we get to a biblical worldview of nations and of laws and of boundaries and of citizens and of the purpose of government in the first place, that is a mechanism to promote good, restrain evil. But we also have to understand that we cannot tacitly allow our rights to be transformed merely into privileges. And if you want to go and read that article in National Review, just Google National Review and government may grant, you know, some phrase like that, and then my name, you'll see that article pop up. But it goes into that history and why Alexander Hamilton, by the way, is my favorite founding father, as many of you know, because of Federalist 84, because this is something that he got right. He understood that the Bill of Rights was simply a redundancy protection, to say that it's not about textually framing our rights and everything. We have to list everything. It's about saying these are the things that, by the way, in case Congress and the executive, the political branches, you didn't understand, these are things that you absolutely cannot touch. We didn't give you power to determine these things. These are things that are left up to the people. And so the rights that are protected, we give our government limited power to operate and ensure that our rights are protected. And so when we see this cultural shift that was accompanied always, and it's always accompanied by a legal one, we have to remember the 100th anniversary of the Scopes trial as more than just a historical marker. It should be a rallying cry. It's a reminder that culture is never neutral, and neither is the law. Secularism is not amoral. It always has either a moral view or an immoral one. It is never neutral. The courtroom, the classroom, and the Capitol are all arenas where worldviews compete. So the Scopes trial should remind us that what happens when the biblical worldview is relegated to the sidelines is always damaging for the culture. So get up off the sidelines, participate in your society, in your church, and especially in your family. So as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.